And?
They used to be. There's a war memorial. Her mother had told her the mortal world was pocked with memorials and monuments to loss. They build with steel and stone and promise to remember, she'd said. But they never do. That's the ferry, said Alia as they crossed the wake of a slow-moving ship. If they see us, take a breath. But Diana didn't wait for an argument. She dunked them beneath the surface, continuing to swim. She wasn't sure how long a mortal could hold her breath, but she counted 20 seconds. As they reemerged, Alia hauled in a long breath and spat river water.
Oh God, water up the nose, she gasped. You're lucky I'm so happy to be home.
I'm glad you're in such a good mood, Diana muttered. I'm being crushed by a grumpy giant and I probably just swallowed toxic waste, but yeah, I am.
Diana eased her hold slightly. It wasn't fair to punish Alia for her desperation to return home, but that didn't change the predicament they were in. Hecatombian would begin with the rise of the new moon, and it was possible that they'd lost more than just a few hours when they'd broken through to the mortal world. Diana saw ships moored near the park, their decks and masts still lit by a glittering spangle of lights. But would a ship be fast enough to get them to Greece in time? Diana thought of the planes she and Maeve had sometimes glimpsed above the Mascara. That was what she needed. She just had no idea where to get one. When they reached the dock, Diana shifted her grip on Alia and grabbed hold of a pylon. Hold on to my neck, she instructed. She'd expected an argument, but apparently Alia's happy mood had made her compliant. She locked her arms over Diana's shoulders without a single complaint. Even her grip was stronger away from the Mascara. If she was faring this well away from the island, Diana could only hope Alia's absence would have a similar effect on Maeve. Diana climbed the pylon and hauled them up to the dock, depositing Alia on the pavement with a thud. Alia flopped onto her back and flapped her arms back and forth.
What are you doing? Said Diana.
Making snow angels.
There's no snow.
Okay, admitted Alia. I'm celebrating.
Diana turned her back on Alia and the slate expanse of the river, intending to declare there was absolutely nothing to celebrate about this debacle when she got her first real look at the city. Her breath caught. She'd thought Ephesus and Banamidal were cities, but if that was the case, then maybe a different word was needed for the massive, spiky, dazzling thing before her. It rose in peaks and ridges, a jagged mountain range that should have run 100 miles, but that had been crammed into a single, narrow space, folded onto itself in hard angles and bright reflective planes, like some grand formation of mica. And it was alive. Even in what should have been the still-sleeping hours of dawn, the city was moving. Motor cars, electric lights blinking in different colors, people on foot with steaming paper cups in their hands, newspapers tucked beneath their arms. It was like facing the Oracle all over again, the terror of staring into the unknown, the thrill of it.
You all right? Asked Alia, pushing herself up from the dock and trying to wring some of the water from her bedraggled yellow shirt.
I don't know, Diana said honestly.
You've really never left that island?
You saw how easy it is to leave my home.
Good point.
A man jogged by, wiping the sweat from his brow and singing loudly to himself. He was tall and lean and hairy.
He has a beard, Diana said in wonder.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing now. Diana cocked her head to the side as the man belted out something that sounded like concrete jungles where dreams tomato, and vanished down the path.
Are males generally tone-deaf?
No, but believe me when I say you don't want to hear Jason attempt karaoke. Diana took a deep breath, trying to clear her mind. She could not let this place overwhelm or distract her. She had a mission to complete.
Where can we get an airplane?
Alia limped past her down the running path and into the park.
We don't need a plane, we need a bath, a hot meal.
She waved at her bare feet.
Shoes.
Diana caught up and moved to block her route. Alia, you can't go home.
Diana.
The people who tried to kill you believe the Warbringer is dead, We need to make sure it stays that way until we reach the spring.
Alia opened her mouth to argue, but Diana cut her off. I know you don't believe me, but you also know the explosion on that boat was no accident.
Alia paused, then nodded slowly.
I know.
Diana felt a surge of gratitude. She'd feared Alia would try to deny everything that had happened now that she was on familiar ground.
Then you have to know it's safer for everyone if your enemies believe you're dead.
Alia scrubbed a hand over her face. You're saying if I try to go home, I could be putting Jason in danger?
Yes.
I can't just let my brother think I'm dead. He could be a target, too.
Once we reach the spring...
Stop talking about the spring. We have no way to get there. We don't have any money, and I'm guessing you don't have a passport.
What's a passport?
Exactly. Let's deal with one thing at a time. I can call Jason.
Diana shook her head. Someone knew how to find you on that boat. They could be monitoring your location through your brother.
Diana could see Alia's disbelief warring with her desire to keep her family safe.
I guess I...
Alia began. A bicycle whirred past them, and Diana yanked her from its path.
Jerk!
Alia yelled after him. The bicyclist glanced back once and held up his middle finger.
Is he an enemy?
Diana asked.
No, he's a New Yorker.
Let's sit, I need to think. They found the nearest bench, and Diana made herself sit, be still. She wanted to act, not pause to ponder, but she needed Alia on her side if they had any hope of getting to the spring.
Okay, said Alia, chewing her lower lip. We can't go to a bank because we don't have ID, and you're basically telling me I can't go home or to the Corrales offices because everyone thinks I'm dead.
And we want to keep it that way.
Right. So I'm home, but if I follow your rules, I'm still completely stranded.
Diana could hear the frustration and fatigue in her voice. She hesitated. She knew she was asking a great deal of Alia, but she had to. The stakes were too high for either of them to flinch.
After everything you've seen, she said, after what we just dared, can you at least trust me enough to try to keep you from harm?
Alia touched her fingers briefly to the bracelet on Diana's left wrist, a thoughtful look on her face. Was she remembering what had happened in the armory?
Maybe, Alia said at last.
At least now Jason's going to have something real to be paranoid about.
Her head snapped up.
That's it.
What's it?
Alia leapt up from the bench. I know what to do, and now that I know I'm not going to die, I'm starving.
But you said yourself we have no money. Do we have something to barter?
No, but I happen to know of a bank that doesn't require ID.
Very well, Diana said. For now, she had little choice but to follow Alia's lead. She would get her bearings, gather her resources.
I'm glad to leave this place. The smell in this part of the city is intolerable.
Alia bit her lip.
Yeah, this part of the city. I can't believe I just swam in the Hudson and I'm about to go barefoot on the subway. I'm going to die of something nasty for sure.
Come on, she said, offering Diana her hand.
You're on my island now. Let's hop a train.
Diana had read about trains. She'd learned about undergrounds and metros, bullet trains and steam engines, all part of her education, her mother's attempt to give her an understanding of the changing mortal world. But there was a difference between those vague impressions left by long hours turning pages at the Ephesium and the reality of a New York City subway train screaming through the dark. Alia had led her across the street from the park, past the bronze statue of a bull, and two armed men in military fatigue standing at the top of a long flight of stairs who had given them the barest glance.
Weird, Alia had muttered. Maybe there was a bomb threat or something.
They'd descended into the very bowels of the city and entered a large tiled chamber that emptied onto a train platform. Then they'd vaulted a boundary and slipped between the metal doors of a train, and now here they were, sitting on plastic seats beneath lights that seemed unnaturally bright, as the train rumbled and shrieked like some kind of demon. At each stop, the metal doors opened, letting the balmy air of the platform gust through the train, and more passengers boarded,
crowding in against one another.
Commuters, said Alia.
The word meant nothing to Diana. These people were of every size, color, and shape, some dressed in fine fabrics, others in cheaply made garments.
Diana noticed Alia kept her feet tucked under her seat, perhaps to hide that they were bare.
Diana and Alia drew a few stares, but most people kept their eyes glued to little boxes they clutched in their palms, like talismans, or stared off into the middle distance, their gazes blank and lifeless.
What's wrong with them? Diana whispered.
That's the subway stare, Alia explained. If the first rule of New York is don't swim in the Hudson, the second is do not make eye contact on the subway.
Why not?
Because someone might talk to you.
Would that be so bad?
The prospect of so many new people to speak to seemed like an unimaginable luxury.
Maybe not, but you never know in New York.
Take that lady, Alia said, bobbing her head very slightly at a woman of middle age with carefully coiffed hair and a large red leather handbag in her lap. She looks nice enough, maybe a little tightly wound, but for all you know, she's got a human head in that purse.
Diana's eyes widened.
Is that common?
I mean, not common. She probably just has a bunch of wadded up tissues and a lot of pictures of her grandkids she wants to show you, but that's bad enough.
Diana considered. Direct eye contact is sometimes considered an act of aggression among primates.
Now you're getting it.
Diana tried not to be too confrontational in her gaze, but she took advantage of the other rider's blank looks and distraction to study them, particularly the males. She'd seen illustrations, photographs, but still they were more varied than she'd expected. Large, small, broad, slender. She saw soft chins, hard jaws, long curling hair, heads shaved smooth as summer melons.
Hey, said a young man in front of them, turning to the bearded, heavy-set passenger behind him. Do you mind?
Mind what? The bearded man replied, his chest puffing out.
The smaller man stepped closer.
You're in my space. How about you back off?
How about you learn your place?
He jabbed his finger into the young man's chest.
Alia rolled her eyes.
God, I hate the subway. She grabbed Diana's elbow and pulled her along, yanking a door open at the end of the car so they could find seats elsewhere. Diana looked back over her shoulder. The men were still glaring at each other, and Diana wondered if they would come to blows. Or would they calm themselves, step away from each other, and realize they hadn't started this morning looking for a fight? Was this Alia's power at work? Or was it just New York?
The new car they entered was a bit emptier, though there were no seats to be had. Near one of the doors, two girls in sheer, shimmery dresses slept slumped against each other, glitter on their cheeks, wilted flower crowns in their tangled hair. The sandals on their feet had high, pointed heels and gossamer-thin straps. They'd painted the nails of their toes silver.
Where do you think they're going? Diana asked.
Probably coming back from somewhere, said Alia a little wistfully.
A party.
I doubt they've been to bed.
They looked magical, as if their sleep might be enchanted.
A cluster of young men entered the car, talking loudly, containers of what smelled like coffee in their hands. They wore what Diana realized was a kind of uniform, dark suits and shirts of white, pale pink, light blue. The men were laughing and whispering to one another, casting looks at the glittery girls. Assessing them, she realized, there was hunger behind their smiles. Diana thought of Hades, lord of the underworld. Maybe here he was the subway god, demanding tolls and tribute from all those who trespassed in his territory. His suited acolytes shuffling from train to train in the dark. Did these girls in their flower crowns know to be watchful? Or, lulled into sleep and incaution, might they simply vanish into some deep wedge of shadow?
Diana's gaze returned to the young men, and one of them took notice.
Hey, baby, he said with a grin at his companions. You like what you see?
I'm fully grown, she said. And I'm not yet sure.
Alia groaned, and the man's companions hooted and jostled him.
That's cold, he said, still smiling, sidling closer. I bet I could convince you.
How?
Let's just say I don't get many complaints.
From your lovers?
The man blinked. He had sandy hair and freckles on his nose.
Yeah. He grinned again. From my lovers.
It's possible they refrain from complaining in order to spare your feelings.
What?
Perhaps if you could keep a woman, you'd have less call to proposition strangers.
Oh, damn, said one of his companions with a laugh. You're a little bitchy, huh?
Said the sandy-haired man. He ran a finger along the strap of her top, his knuckles brushing her skin.
I like that.
Hey, said Alia.
Diana seized his finger and twisted it hard right. The man expelled a high-pitched bleat.
I don't like that word. I can see why you're unpopular with women.
Let go of me, you.
She twisted again, and he crumpled to his knees.
Perhaps some classes? She suggested.
She looked to his companions.
Or better advisors. You should keep your friend from embarrassing himself.
She let him go, and he howled, clutching his finger to his chest.
It reflects poorly on you all.
Call a cop,
the man wailed.
Oh, look, said Alia. Wouldn't you know, this is our stop.
She yanked Diana through the doors and onto the platform. Diana looked back once. The glittery girls were waving. Then Alia pulled her onto a moving metal staircase, and they rose higher, higher, up into the swelter of the sun. Diana squinted, eyes adjusting to the glare and the noise, the extraordinary noise. The city she'd glimpsed from the park had hummed dimly with life, but now morning had arrived in earnest, and they were at the center of the thrumming hive. It was as if the very pavement beneath their feet, the walls around them, vibrated with sound. There were people everywhere, crowds of them, great packs of them that milled on corners and then surged forward in lowing herds. Every surface was covered in images and signs. They were full of commands and promises. Act today. Give diamonds. Earn your degree. Low, low prices. Enchant him. Who, exactly? Diana recognized most of the words, and the numbers she knew referred to currency. Other messages were less clear. What exactly was a bar made of salad, and why would one want to pay for food by the pound? The men and women who stared back at her from the signs looked different from those walking the streets. Their hair gleamed, and their skin was perfectly smooth and unblemished. Perhaps they were meant to be religious icons. Beside her, Alia hissed, and Diana realized her limp had worsened.
Do you want a rest, or I could...
You're not carrying me through the streets of Manhattan.
We're already drawing attention, Diana said with a shrug. I don't see how it could hurt.
It could hurt my pride.
A young man in a t-shirt and short pants shook his head as they walked by.
Hey, girl, you look wrung out.
Someone ask you?
Said Alia. And the man put his hands up as if to make peace, but he was smiling.
Is he a friend?
Diana asked as they passed a store window filled with electronics. She was tempted to see if they could stop to go in. Everything had so many fascinating buttons and knobs.
Who, that guy? No.
Then why would he presume to make a comment on your appearance?
Alia laughed.
Guys presume all kinds of things.
You do look tired, Diana noted.
I didn't ask you either.
You've really never seen a man before?
Only in books and from a great distance.
Well, what do you think?
Diana watched a man in glasses pass.
Well, they're a bit disappointing. From my mother's descriptions, I thought they would be much larger and more aggressive.
Alia snorted.
We'll find you a frat house.
And why are they so bug-eyed and slack-jawed? Is that an affliction of all males or particular to the men of your city?
Alia burst out laughing.
That's what happens when a 6-foot supermodel walks down the street in a few scraps of leather.
Ah, so they're ogling.
I've heard of that.
Alia held up a hand, signaling for them to stop.
We're here.
Diana peered through the window at rows of tiny frosted cakes.
Is this where we'll eat?
I wish. As soon as I have cash in hand, I'm going to eat a dozen cupcakes.
Why not just eat one big cake?
Because... Alia hesitated. I'm not entirely sure. It's the principle of the thing. She glanced across the street, but Diana wasn't certain what held her attention. There was a large sign that said entrance, advertisements offering what seemed to be hourly rates for parking, as well as a baffling banner promising special treatment for early birds. Perhaps they were poultry traders. What is this place? Diana asked. A parking garage? It's like a hotel for cars. Alia rolled her shoulders. Ready? For what? You've been in New York nearly 2 hours, said Alia. It's time for some light breaking and entering. Chapter 7. Alia kept one eye on the entrance to the parking garage, trying not to look like she was studying it too closely, and doing her best to ignore the way her stomach was growling. She could have eaten every single thing in that bakery display. You intend to steal a car? Diana sputtered. Why would I steal a car I can't drive? Alia said, hoping she sounded calmer than she felt. At this point, she was getting by on bravado alone. It had been nerve-wracking enough to hop the turnstiles on the subway, something she'd never done without Nim to egg her on, and now she was basically about to commit a crime. It wasn't as if Jason would press charges, but she wasn't big on the idea of getting caught. Everything in her was screaming, "Go home. Hit reset." She was on her own turf now. She should feel calmer, more confident than she had on the island, but she never did well in crowds, and Manhattan was basically one big crowd. She watched one of the attendants vanish into the recesses of the garage. The other was on the phone in the office, just visible through the glass. This might be their only opportunity to get inside. Look, you asked me to trust you. Now I'm asking you to trust me. Diana's dark brows lowered, and she huffed out a breath. Very well. A huge vote of confidence from the Cult Island delegation. Good, said Alia, hoping she sounded sure of herself. First task is to get past those attendants without them noticing us. She loped quickly across the street and then dropped into her best crouch as she slunk along the wall, relieved that Diana followed. This feels like lawbreaking, Diana whispered as they crept up the ramp. I mean, we're not really breaking any laws, we're just circumventing some bureaucratic challenges. Alia led them past the booth and to the stairwell, hoping they wouldn't run into the other attendant as they climbed. When they reached the third floor, she pushed the door open. It was quiet up here, the air cool in the dark. The only sounds were the occasional squeal of tires or the rumble of an engine echoing from somewhere in the cavernous building. She counted the spaces. She'd never actually been to this garage, but she knew the number she was looking for. 321. March 21st, her mother's birthday. 318, 319, 320. Could this possibly be it? Alia felt a little deflated. She wasn't sure what she'd expected, but the car was a disappointingly dull Toyota Camry. Of course, it was possible she'd gotten this all wrong. What if the space number was her parents' anniversary and not her mother's birthday? What if Jason wasn't using this garage anymore? She peered through the driver's side window. The interior of the car was spotless. Empty drink holders, a receipt folded on the dashboard. And there, hanging from the rearview mirror, a pendant emblazoned with a fleur-de-lis, the symbol of New Orleans, Lena Mayu's hometown. Alia's mother had once confided she'd contemplated getting a tattoo of the fleur-de-lis to remind her of home. What changed your mind? Alia had asked her. Her mother had just winked. Who says I have? Alia blinked back an embarrassing prickle of tears. Okay, she said. Don't freak out, but we're going to have to break the window. Why? We don't have a key and I need to get into the trunk. But it's your car? My brother's. Perhaps I can get the trunk open without the key. Diana gripped the lip of the trunk just above the license plate and yanked upward. Instead of the latch giving, the metal of the trunk peeled upward with a shriek. Diana bit her lip and stepped back. The rear of the car looked like an open coin purse. Sorry about that. Alia listened for the patter of running footsteps, but apparently the attendants either hadn't heard one of their cars being torn apart, or hadn't cared. She looked at the gaping trunk, then back at Diana.
So you're the weak one in your family, huh?
Alia and Diana peered into the trunk. There was an industrial-sized flashlight, jumper cables, and a gigantic canvas duffel.
Bless you, Jason, you paranoid loon.
What is it?
A bug-out bag.
Alia hefted the duffel from the trunk, laid it on the ground, and unzipped it. Jason has them stashed all around the city in case of emergency. In Brooklyn, too.
Alia ignored most of the gear. A tarp and tent, a water purification system, rain ponchos, matches, freeze-dried meals. She set aside the first aid kit. Her feet would be grateful for that later.
It's basically everything you'd need to survive an apocalypse.
Is he so sure one will come? Diana asked.
No, he's just a control freak. Jason is basically the biggest Boy Scout ever. He likes to be prepared for every possibility.
But that's impossible.
Try telling him that.
Aha!
Triumphantly, Alia held up a huge wad of cash. We're rich.
Is it enough for an airplane?
At least Diana was consistent.
Maybe a model airplane.
It's only $1,000, but it's enough to get us a room and something to eat while we figure out what to do next.
Alia didn't miss the troubled expression that crossed Diana's face. She knew Diana truly believed in all of this Warbringer stuff, an age of bloodshed, the magical spring.
Alia wasn't sure what she thought. She couldn't deny the bizarre things she'd seen over the last 24 hours, or the fact that they had somehow traveled all the way from the Aegean to the Hudson River in what had felt like the blink of an eye. Part of her still wanted to believe it was all a vivid dream, that she would wake up in her bedroom on Central Park West, having never left for Istanbul at all. But that part of her was growing less and less convincing. Being back in Manhattan should have made Diana's island seem more like a fantasy, but there was something about seeing this girl walk and talk in such an ordinary place that made everything that had come before feel even realer. It was like looking out a familiar window and seeing an entirely new view. Alia pulled a small red nylon backpack from the larger duffel. She could sort through what had happened on the island later. Right now, she was too tired and hungry to form a rational thought.
Could you?
She gestured to the duffel. As Diana hefted the bag into the trunk and crushed the metal back together, Alia opened the red backpack and stuffed everything she needed inside. The car's rear end was a lumpy mess, but at least no one walking by would know it had been pried open. They took the stairs back down to the ground floor, and then strolled casually past the attendant at the entrance. He stared, but it wasn't as if they were leaving with a car.
What now? Said Diana.
First stop, shoes, replied Alia, though she was dreading walking into a store with her grubby bare feet. After that, she really didn't know what to do, and there was something else bothering her. They'd seen soldiers on all the major street corners and at the entrance and exit to the subway. It reminded her of the images she'd seen of New York after 9/11, when the National Guard had been stationed in the city. Had there been some kind of attack while she was away? Her fingers itched for her phone. Once they were settled, she needed to get online, or at least find a newspaper. There was a Duane Reade on the corner, and as they entered the drugstore, Diana heaved a great sigh, holding her arms out to her sides.
The air is so much cooler in here.
The clerk behind the counter raised her brows.
Yeah, the wonders of technology. Fantastic.
Alia cleared her throat, grabbed a shopping basket, and pulled Diana down the nearest aisle.
Look at this place, Diana marveled. The lights, the profusion of plastic, everything is so glossy.
Alia tried to restrain a grin. Stop fondling the deodorants.
But they look like jewels.
Now I'm picturing you wearing those as earrings. Let's keep moving. In her peripheral vision, she could see a security guard tracking them through the store. She wasn't really surprised. Diana looked like she'd gotten lost on her way to work at the Barbarian strip club, and Alia was a black girl in dirty clothes with no shoes. She was a perfect magnet for a shop cop. She could almost hear her mother's voice warning her and Jason to be careful, not to draw attention. Don't get into a situation where you have to explain yourself.
Lena, their father would say,
You're teaching them to imagine snubs where there are none. You're making them afraid.
It was the one thing their parents had never managed to see eye to eye on. At least she had a pocket full of cash.
Alia found her way to a sign that said Summer Fun and plucked the most comfortable-looking pair of flip-flops she could find off the shelf, then herded Diana down the hair care aisle.
How can there be so many kinds? Diana asked, running her fingers over the bottles of shampoo.
What do you use to wash your hair at home?
Diana shrugged.
We make our own soaps.
Of course you do, said Alia.
Alia scanned the rows for a deep conditioner that she hoped would get her braids back in shape and a leave-in to go with it. As a kid, she'd insisted on using strawberry oil every single day until her mother had refused to buy her more.
I thought we were just here for shoes, Diana said as Alia tossed the bottles into her basket.
And other necessities.
But, trust me, these are necessities.
At least the shop cop seemed to be keeping his distance, but she could see him in the mirror, tracking back and forth down the neighboring aisle like a circling shark, just waiting for her to make trouble or step to the register without enough money. As they made their way to the checkout, Alia filled their basket with candy, chips, and soda, making it clear they were here to spend.
You don't want anything? She asked.
It's on me.
Diana's even white teeth worried her lower lip.
I wouldn't know where to begin.
If Jason were here, he'd try to get you to eat protein bars and squirrel food. Do you know one Halloween he gave away raisins to all the kids in the building? He said they were nature's candy. I was getting dirty looks from the kids downstairs for months.
Nature's candy? Said Diana.
Dates, maybe, but not raisins. Perhaps beets. They have a very high sugar content.
It was even worse the next year. He gave away toothbrushes.
Alia shook her head. Sometimes it was hard to believe they came from the same parents.
Lucky for you, I'm a junk food aficionado. We shall have only the finest of gummy bears and the fieriest of Doritos.
Once you've truly experienced the sodium and high fructose corn syrup America has to offer, you'll never want to go home.
This time Alia couldn't ignore the worried expression on Diana's face.
What is it?
Diana fiddled with a bag of yogurt pretzels.
I'm not sure I can go home after what I've done.
I know you guys are all no contact with the outside world, but...
Diana looked up at her with those steady dark blue eyes, and Alia's words trailed off as realization struck.
You mean saving me. You might not be able to go back because you saved my life.
Diana turned her attention to a tin of almonds.
There's a great deal at stake, not just for me.
Alia felt a tide of guilt wash through her. Diana had saved her life not once, but twice. As much as she wanted to just find a way home and spend about a week sleeping, watching TV, and forgetting she'd ever met this girl, she owed her. She knew she should say something, but instead she tossed a t-shirt at Diana and headed toward the register.
Diana held it up.
I heart NY?
I love New York.
That much is apparent.
No, the shirt is for you.
It's a very strong statement. The city is enticing, no doubt, but...
It's so idiots will stop staring at your boobs. Alia said loudly as a couple of boys who couldn't be more than 13 craned their necks over the aisle.
You wish me to cover myself?
I'm not going all Puritan on you, but you're the one who said we should avoid attracting attention. No one seems to be able to resist the magical combination of cleavage, leather, lots of bronze skin, and bedhead.
Bedhead?
It means... Ugh, never mind. Let's just say you look like some nerdy wet dream.
Diana glanced at the boys who hadn't stopped gawking.
Surely they've seen breasts before.
On a real live girl, who knows? But the novelty never seems to wear off.
Alia tossed two pairs of sweats and another t-shirt into the basket. Sweatpants during a New York summer made her skin crawl, but they were low on options.
More clothes?
Trust me, if you really want my help getting us to Greece, I'm going to need better clothes than these.
Why?
You can get away with...
Alia waved vaguely at Diana's ensemble.
Whatever this is, but I can't walk around looking like a tennis-playing hobo.
Why?
Alia bristled. Because people see different things when they look at me.
Because you're so short?
I'm not short, you're just a giant.
And no, because I'm black.
She tried to keep her voice light. She didn't want to talk about this stuff. It was bad enough when one of her teachers thought they should have a forum on race, and she had to deal with a bunch of Bennett kids debating affirmative action, or worse, coming up to her to apologize after class. Diana frowned as Alia walked them to the register. I've read about the racial conflicts in your country's history. I was given to understand they'd ended. That was what her father had wanted to believe, too. But he'd never had to live in his wife's skin, or his daughter's, or his son's. They haven't. They happen every day. And if you don't believe me, check the security guard breathing down our necks. When people look at me, they don't see Alia Corrales. They just see a messed up brown girl in ratty clothes. So let's get out of here before he comes by with a, how you ladies doing today? Mind opening up that bag for me? They plunk their items down at the register. You doing cosplay or something? The girl behind the counter asked, cracking her gum. You a warrior princess?
Diana flinched. Is it that obvious?
You look good, said the clerk. I don't like that fantasy stuff, though. How about when you can't tell the difference? Alia muttered. Huh? Nothing. Just been a long day. Once they had paid with a few bills from Alia's giant wad of cash, and the security guard had stopped giving them the fisheye, Alia slipped the new flip-flops onto her feet, gratified by their loud slap on the linoleum. Laden with plastic bags, they headed outside and crossed the little park. Then Alia pointed them toward Alphabet City and the Goodnight Hotel. She knew there must be hostels or hotels that were closer, but she didn't have her phone, and she didn't want to wander the streets asking for directions. That voice inside her telling her to just go home was getting louder and louder. You've stayed here before? Asked Diana doubtfully when they arrived in front of the hotel's grubby facade. No, Alia admitted. But my mom and I used to pass by this place all the time. They were some of her happiest memories, sitting with her mother in Eboli's salon on Avenue C, reading or just listening to the ladies talk, watching hour after hour of true crime shows. After her parents had died, Alia hadn't been able to bear the idea of returning to the little salon without her mother, but eventually her hair was in such a state that she'd had to. It was that or go somewhere new, and Alia wasn't big on somewhere new. She hadn't talked to Jason about it. She'd just asked their driver, Dez, if he knew where to go, and he'd taken her to Eboli's without a word. Alia thought she was ready to walk through that familiar door, and she'd been fine when she saw its cheerfully painted awning, even when she glimpsed Eboli through the window. But when she'd walked inside and that bell had jingled, the smell of sweetness and chemicals had just about knocked her down. She was crying before she knew it, and Eboli and Nora were hugging her tight and handing her tissues. They hadn't fussed or asked questions Alia didn't want to answer. They hadn't spouted useless crap like, everything happens for a reason. They'd just turned on the TV, plopped her in a chair, and set to work as if nothing terrible had ever happened, as if Alia's life hadn't been torn in two. Eboli's had become a kind of refuge. In fact, Alia had been there less than 2 weeks ago, getting her hair braided before the trip. They'd watched a billion episodes of Justice Served because Nora was on a serial killer kick, and by the time Alia left, her scalp felt as if it had been winched tight to her skull. Alia had passed beneath the sign of the goodnight with its sleeping moon as she always had, made a wish as she always had, her mind trained only on preparing for her trip aboard the Thetis and escaping New York. Now she looked up at that sign and scowled. Stupid moon. The hotel was just as miserable on the inside, the lobby walls water-stained, the linoleum chipped in places. The guy slouching at the front desk didn't look much older than Alia, and he had one of those chin-burp goatees that always made her want to offer up a napkin. This was the part Alia had been the most nervous about, but she did her best to sound calm and beleaguered as she explained that they'd had their luggage stolen at Port Authority. I don't know, he said in a heavy accent. Russian, maybe. Definitely Eastern European. Lots of bad stuff happening. Must be careful. Come on, Alia said, attempting some measure of the easy charm her father had possessed in such abundance. Do we look like trouble? The guy looked up, up, up at Diana.
Nie nisme zaplacha, she said, looking solemn.
Alia stared. Diana spoke Russian? The man's flat expression didn't change.
Cash, he said. A full week, up front.
A full week? Even at a dump like the Good Night, that cut deeply into their funds. It's fine, she told herself as she counted out the bills. You'll figure out a safe way to contact Jason, and then money isn't going to be an issue. And what if you didn't have the Corrales name and fortune to back you up? She'd save that question for another day.
Rooms are cleaned every afternoon, said the clerk as the money vanished beneath the desk. No cooking in rooms, no tampering with thermostat.
He slapped a metal key on the counter. It had a pink plastic tag with 406 written on it in black marker.
You lose key, pay $100 fine.
He narrowed his eyes at Diana.
I watch you.
Jeez, Alia said as they headed up the stairs. What did you say to him? I simply told him we weren't threats.
Alia rolled her eyes. Not suspicious at all.
How did you learn to speak Russian?
It was Bulgarian, and I'm not entirely sure.
How many other languages do you speak? Diana paused as if calculating.
I think all of them.
A day ago, Alia would have said that was impossible, but now it was just one more weird thing to add to the list. Where were you when I had 2 hours of French homework? She grumbled. Naturally, the Good Night didn't have an elevator, so they trudged up 4 flights to their floor. Well, Alia trudged. Diana scampered up the stairs like the world's most beautiful goat. They followed a long, dank hall to their room, but the old-fashioned lock beneath the doorknob didn't want to cooperate at first. After a few minutes of swearing and key jiggling, the door popped open. The room smelled of old cigarettes and was carpeted in a color that might have started life as emerald, but had faded to what Alia would have described as summer swamp. A cramped passage led past a tiny bathroom tiled in grubby white to a room with a low ceiling and 2 narrow beds, a battered nightstand between them. No phone, no television, just a radiator against the wall and an air conditioner in the window. Alia set her bags down and pressed one of the buttons. Nothing.
Don't tamper with the thermostat, my butt.
She was already sweating. Diana stood in the center of the room, arms still laden with plastic bags. Do you really live in such places? No view of the sky? So little light and color?
Well, yeah,
Alia said, feeling defensive, despite the fact that she'd been composing a list of the room's shortcomings herself.
Some people have to.
Diana placed her cargo carefully on the bed. This must be why everyone looks so tired. You travel in tubes underground, live crammed into warrens not fit for rabbits.
We manage, Alia said, extracting the clean clothes and toiletries they'd purchased.
I didn't mean to offend, Diana said. It looks mostly tidy.
Alia said, and left it at that.
She could defend New York all day, but one of the unhappy perks of loving biology was knowing exactly how resilient germs were and exactly where vermin liked to hide. They'd both probably end up crawling with bedbugs.
Let's shower and then find something to eat.
I'm not sure it's safe for you to go back out. Alia popped open the bag of Doritos.
You saw how crowded the city is. We'll be fine. And if anyone is looking for Alia Corrales, they're not going to start here.
She crammed a handful of chips into her mouth. I thought we were going to get a proper meal.
Appetizers, Alia said with her mouth still full. When she managed to swallow, she snatched up the toiletries and clothes. I'm taking first shower. Don't, wander off.
In the bathroom, Alia spared herself the briefest glance in the mirror as she stripped out of her clothes. One glimpse of her bruises was enough. She shoved her Learning at Sea polo shirt into the trash. She never wanted to look at it again. The pipes creaked as she turned on the shower, but the water pressure wasn't terrible. Miserably hot and sweaty as she was,
Alia set the water to scalding and tried to scrub all the grime and salt from her body. She had bumps and bruises everywhere. One thigh was almost all scratches and abrasions, and one of her toenails was cracked and nearly black with blood beneath the nail. But she was alive. After all of it, she was alive. Panic and grief came roaring toward her again, and this time she didn't fight it. She braced her back against the plastic shower door and let the tremors shake her in heavy, tearless sobs. It wasn't the cry she wanted. It wasn't the comfort of being in her own bed, Nim telling some stupid joke beside her, a pint of ice cream close at hand, but it would have to do. She turned the water to cold to cool down her body, and when she emerged a few minutes later, dried off with one of the scratchy white towels, and pulled on her cheap drugstore sweats, she felt almost human again. "You're up," she said to Diana. As soon as Diana disappeared into the bathroom, Alia hooked the red backpack over her arm and headed for the door. She knew Diana didn't think it was safe to get in touch with Jason, but she needed to reach her brother. If she had been targeted, Jason could be targeted too. And if someone on his team had tipped off the Foundation's enemies to Alia's whereabouts, then maybe Jason was putting his trust in the wrong people. She had spotted the burner phone in Jason's duffel at the parking garage and managed to slip it into the backpack while Diana was turned away. Now she'd just step outside, call Nim, and figure out how Nim could set up a meeting with Jason without revealing that Alia was back in town. But when Alia reached for the doorknob, she stopped short. It was gone. The lock was still intact, but the doorknob above it had been snapped clean off its base. Diana. She must have done it while Alia was in the shower. So much for trust. Then again, Alia had been planning on leaving. "That's beside the point," she mumbled, tearing open a bag of sour gummy worms with her teeth. "When that girl gets out of the shower, we're going to have words." "What would you like to discuss?" Diana called over the sound of running water. "You can hear me?" Alia asked incredulously. Then she flopped back on the bed in defeat. "Never mind. Of course you can." Alia had every intention of staying awake to tell Diana exactly how she felt about doorknobs going missing, but she must have fallen asleep, because the next thing she knew, Diana was shaking her awake. Her hair was damp, and she'd changed into the I Heart New York t-shirt and gray sweatpants. "What?" Alia began, but Diana clapped a hand over her mouth and placed a finger to her own lips. "Someone's trying to get into our room," she whispered. Alia felt her heart start to pound. "The maid?" "The maid would have a key, and the tread is too heavy." "Alia," Diana said, "they've found us." Chapter 8. "Stay here," said Diana, wishing that she hadn't taken quite as hard a stance on weaponry back on Themyscira. "But how could they have found me?" Alia protested in hushed tones. "We don't know what forces are working against you. Be silent and be still. And if anything happens to me..." Diana trailed off. She didn't know how to finish that sentence. She supposed she should try to extract a promise from Alia that she would attempt to reach the spring on her own, but there was no time for oaths. "Run." Alia nodded, her eyes wide. Diana's feet were bare from the shower. She padded silently down the narrow passage that led past the bathroom, the feel of the carpet's rough fibers strange against her skin. She crept the last few feet, her heart thudding hard in her chest. This would be a fight, a real fight, not a sparring match in the armory. She paused, waiting. Silence. Had she imagined the whole thing? Had her overstimulated mind fabricated an intruder? Another guest might have simply mistaken their room for his, tried his key, and realizing his mistake, moved along. The door rattled slightly again. Someone was trying to tamper with the lock. She heard a click as the tumblers gave way. There was no time to think. Diana bent her knees and kicked, her foot connecting hard at the very center of the door. It flew off its hinges, and she heard a surprised cry as the door crashed into the intruder, driving him back against the wall. She registered a large form, a young male about her height, broad in the shoulders, good reflexes. He recovered quickly, shifting into fighting stance,
and they faced each other in the dim light of the hallway, circling. He lunged toward her. She seized his shoulders, twisting to the side to bring him down, using his momentum, but he adjusted his stance, very good reflexes, and regained his balance. He was strong, too, surprisingly so. Diana found it was a bit like reaching for a pitcher and discovering it full instead of empty, unexpected but no great challenge. She shifted her grip. The fabric of her attacker's shirt bunched in her hands as she slammed him against the wall. The plaster splintered. He groaned and she shoved him to the floor, pinning him face down, one arm extended, the tendons bending as she applied pressure. "I'll break it," she said as he struggled against her. "Be still." "Diana!" Alia was standing beside the destroyed door, staring down at them in shock. "I told you to remain in the room. Diana!" "The situation is under control. Whoever dispatched this assassin sent a weakling." The young man beneath her grunted, trying to wriggle free. She gave a tug on his arm and he froze. "Who sent you?" she growled. Alia clapped her hands over her mouth. She bent double, shoulders shaking, and for a moment Diana thought she was weeping, but she was laughing. Was she having some kind of hysterical fit? "Diana," she gasped, "that weakling is my brother." Diana looked down at the male in her grip, his face planted in the hallway's dirty green carpet. Are you sure?" Alia barked a laugh.
"Pretty sure, yeah."
Diana changed her hold, flipping the intruder so that he was pinned by her knees, and peered into his furious face. His gaze blazed with anger, a muscle twitching in his jaw. Now that she looked, she supposed he wasn't dressed like an assassin. He wore a clean white shirt of fine cotton unbuttoned at the throat, the sleeves rolled up to his elbows. His head was shaved, though not quite smooth, and he had the same dark liquid eyes and brown skin as Alia. In fact, now that she was looking at him properly, the resemblance was striking. "Why did you attack me?" she said.
"You attacked me."
Diana winced. So she had.
"Well, why were you trying to break into our room?"
He bucked once beneath her, and she used her body weight to shove him back to the floor. Brother or not, she didn't know his intentions.
"I was looking for my sister," he snarled. "Who the hell are you?"
Alia cleared her throat. "Maybe you should let him up."
"He's in no danger. I'm not hurting him."
"I'm pretty sure his ego is permanently bruised, and I don't know what might be hiding in that carpet."
"We should search him for weapons."
"Diana, he's my brother. Let him up." Reluctantly, Diana rocked back on her heels and stood, releasing him. She offered him a hand, but he ignored it, making what she thought was an unnecessarily dramatic show of shaking out his arm. He came up to his knees, and in a single swift movement, yanked a gun from a holster near his ankle as he leapt to his feet.
"You should have searched me for weapons."
"Jason," Alia yelped.
"I'm just making a point. If..."
Diana had never seen a gun outside of the pages of a book, but she'd been trained to disarm an assailant. Her hand snapped forward, striking the pressure points of his wrist. The gun dropped from his grip, and in the next breath she had him up against the wall, cheek pressed to the plaster.
"I was just making a point," Jason said. "I was agreeing with you, whoever you are. Alia, will you call her off?"
"I'm not sure I should. What are you doing with a gun, Jason?"
"I have it for protection."
"How's that working out for you?" Diana gave him a little shove. "Alia hasn't been out of my sight once. How did you find us?"
"The trunk with the go bag is equipped with an alarm in case of theft," he said. "You triggered it when you broke in, although I have no idea what you did to that poor car. I asked the attendants if they'd seen anyone coming or going with a red backpack, and they remembered you two."
"But how did you find the hotel?"
"The cell phone in the backpack."
"A phone?"
"Yes," he grunted. "There's a burner phone in every go bag. I followed the signal here."
"Did you know this?" asked Diana. But the guilt on Alia's face told her all she needed to know. She remembered how Alia had asked her to put the duffel back in the trunk. Had she done it deliberately so Diana would turn her back? She was surprised at how much the betrayal stung.
"Diana, I need to ask you to unhand my brother. Again."
Grudgingly, Diana released him, but this time she patted him down. She decided not to think too much about the fact that she was in such close proximity to a male, friend or foe, and ignored his sharp, "Hey," when she ran her hand up his thigh. "You pulled a gun on us," she said. "Your discomfort is your own doing." "I'm trying to teach Alia to be more cautious," he complained. "Lesson learned, big brother. Was it worth it?" Diana stepped back and Alia's brother turned, straightening the collar of his shirt. "Happy?" he asked. "Reassured." She expected another round of recriminations, but instead Jason turned to Alia. He crossed the short distance between them and pulled her into a tight hug. "I thought..." We had word the fetus had lost contact. I didn't know what to think.
"I'm okay," Alia said,
but Diana could hear the wobble in her voice. Diana was embarrassed by the acute pang of envy she felt. She would have liked someone to lean on, to tell her she hadn't made a terrible mistake, that she wasn't in this alone. Then Jason broke the hug and held Alia at arm's length. "How could you be so stupid?" "I'm not stupid," she said, knocking Jason's hands away and folding her arms. "Do you have any idea how worried I've been? The fetus lost radio contact almost a week ago."
"A week?" said Alia.
Diana's heart lurched. A week gone? They must have lost time when they left the island. Hecatombian began with the rise of the first visible new moon after the summer solstice, the slender white scythe of the reaping moon. How long did they have? "When was the last full moon?" said Diana. Jason stared at her as if she'd gone mad. "What?" "I need a calendar." He scowled and handed over the box-like device she realized was his phone. She touched the screen tentatively.
"I don't..."
He snatched it from her and jabbed at it a few times before holding it up. They'd reached the end of June. According to the screen, the last full moon had been on June 20th, and that meant Hecatombian would begin on July 7th. They had less than a week to get to the spring. Jason shoved his phone back in his pocket. "You disappeared," he said to Alia. "They sent out search parties. I thought..." His voice broke. "For God's sake, Alia, I thought you were dead."
"But I'm not, Jason, I'm here."
"How is that even possible? They said you boarded the boat in Istanbul. Did you change your mind?"
"I..."
"Everything okay up here?"
The Bulgarian from the front desk stood panting at the end of the hall. It had taken him long enough to come investigate. As one, they moved to block his view of the demolished door.
"Everything's great," said Alia.
"You bet," said Jason.
"Sichko e nared. Molia, barneta se, kam zanimaniatia se,"
said Diana as reassuringly as she could. The Bulgarian made an unconvinced "huh" sound and started back down the stairs.
"Should I even ask?" said Alia.
"I just told him that all was well, and instructed him to return to what he was doing."
"Not suspicious at all," said Jason.
Diana saw Alia bite back a smile. She bristled. It was a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
"Let's get inside before he changes his mind and comes back to take a closer look," said Jason. "Help me with the door."
"Diana can just..." Alia began, and Diana gave a frantic shake of her head. It was one thing for Alia to know how strong she was, but the less Jason knew about where she was from or what she could do, the better.
"Just what?" said Jason, already hefting one side of the door.
"Just help," Alia finished weakly. They shuffled into the passageway and got the door wedged shut behind them. Somehow the room looked smaller and shabbier with Alia's brother standing inside it. Despite the fact that he'd just been in a fight, he looked unrumpled and immaculate, the white of his shirt unsullied, a heavy watch glinting at his wrist. Could she convince this boy of her cause? Could she convince Alia? She thought she would have time to make her case and get them to Greece. Now she had only a few days. Jason turned a slow circle, taking in the room's bleak furnishings, the plastic bags of candy.
"I've been trying to call in favors with the Turkish government, and you're having a slumber party."
"That's not what this is," Alia objected. Jason threw his hands up in exasperation.
Then what is it? What are you doing in a place like this, Alia, and how did you get here?
Diana sat down on the bed,